Thanks very much, Mary. I appreciate the opportunity to talk about our data regarding BV with you, since we haven't heard about BV yet and don't actually hear much about it at this conference. I thought I'd just sort of give you a brief background about why we care. It is the most common cause of vaginitis. There's a strong association with race and sex. Typically, it manifests by abnormal discharge and amine odor. That's a direct effect of the anaerobic predominance glycosidase activity and metabolism. And the reason it's really of concern is that this condition has been consistently linked to adverse outcomes of pregnancy, including preterm delivery, premature rupture of membranes, and chorioamnionitis, as well as upper reproductive tract infection, endometritis, and other forms of PID. It's also consistently associated with an increased risk of gonorrhea, chlamydia, trichomoniasis, HIV, herpes, and HPV acquisition. So not a great thing to have your vaginal flora deranged. And I just want to point out my little visual, I hope you caught my visual clue to have the smell of BV. So the etiology and microbiology of BV have been confounding people for quite a long time. Data strongly and consistently suggest a role for sex in establishing and maintaining BV, but diverse exposures indicate that more than one pathway may be involved. So in heterosexual women, new male sex partner, the same male sex partner in some case series, in Kate Bradshaw's study in Melbourne, unprotected vaginal intercourse and the use of vaginal lubricant have all been associated with BV somewhat consistently in many studies. In lesbian women, or in women who have sex with women, sharing vaginal sex toys, lifetime number of female partners, and also interestingly recently, vaginal lubricant use are associated with increased risk of BV. We have relied for a long time on cultivation-based studies to define the microbiota of BV, and those studies have told us for a long time, again, that Gardnerella vaginalis is pretty much ubiquitous in BV. However, the last several years have seen a real explosion of cultivation-independent approaches that use molecular techniques to expand the spectrum of BV-associated bacteria. And just to give you an idea of what you find when you apply, in this case, 16S ribosomal DNA analysis, this is broad range 16S ribosomal DNA analysis, to women with BV, you find an unbelievable number, perhaps an infinite number of anaerobic species, primarily anaerobic species. And this is just work from my colleague David Frederick's lab that we published a few years ago and summarizes about 2 years of solid work, where David looked at 20 women who had BV using this technique and identified 46 species. There was an average of 14 species per subject, and very, very importantly and interestingly, novel organisms or novel phylotypes made up over half of the clones in this library. So really a big explosion, I think, of understanding what this was. What's, I think, most interesting about some of these bugs are that they are highly specific for BV. When we use PCR to look for Gardnerella vaginalis, which was always considered sort of the sine qua non of BV, we actually find it in about 70% of women. Many of them don't have BV. So Gardnerella is very nonspecific for bacterial vaginosis. In contrast, three of the organisms that David defined, which we've termed BVAB1, 2, and 3, I guess there's not a pointer here, are actually quite specific for BV. And if you look on the bottom right of the slide, you can see that the specificity ranges from about 93% to 97%. So we rarely find these bugs in women who do not have BV. So we actually got interested in really looking at the profile of these BV-associated bacteria using qualitative PCR, species-specific qualitative PCR, with an analysis of reported sexual practices. And we started thinking about this because we had two clinic populations, which I will describe to you here, a research clinic where we recruited women who had sex with women in the last year, and our STD clinic, also located in Seattle. And in our initial analyses, just eyeballing the data, it appeared that the prevalence of these organisms, these specific bacteria among women with BV, were actually different in those two populations. So we decided to study it a little more systematically. So we recruited women at both of these clinics, and I'll talk about that in a second. BV was defined by AMSL criteria, so clinical criteria, and confirmed by Nugent score, i.e. Gram stain. Bacterium-specific qualitative PCR assays were performed on vaginal fluid at a single visit in these women, and then we measured the association between various reported exposures, demographics, and primarily sexual risk behavior with these individual bacteria by pretty typical statistical analyses. These are the bacterial species for which we have qualitative PCR assays. These were derived from our earlier analyses that David did, and you can just see them there. There's a bunch of them, I think, that you're probably familiar with, but I'll point out a couple. We looked for Mobiluncus, both curtisii and mullieris, all those new BVABs that I mentioned, those three, two Megasphaera-type bugs, which actually are not that similar, it turns out, Lactobacillus crispatus and Einar's Gardnerella adapobium, and then an Agarthella-like bacterium. So who did we end up with? We enrolled 423 women, 248 were from our research clinic, and those were women who had sex with women in the last year. These women had an extensive computer-assisted self-interview to assess their behavior, and the BV prevalence at baseline in that group, cross-sectional at enrollment, was 29%. In the Seattle STD clinic, we enrolled 175 women. We did invite women with BV to enroll at no particular ratio, somewhat preferentially. We did not do CASI in these women, which is an important distinction. We did a face-to-face interview and collected demographics, sexual history, and symptoms. And the BV prevalence in this group pretty much approximated what we see in the clinic, which is about a third of women. So then taking of that group, the women with BV, which amounted to 171, what I'm showing here is just some very basic comparison characteristics among the women from STD clinic versus the women who were in the research clinic, again, reporting sex with women in the past year. The women in the STD clinic, much more likely to self-identify as black, 45% versus 6%. And similarly, non-white race of any kind, 62 versus 21%. And not surprisingly, in the STD clinic, in the last month, 86% of those women reported sex with men, 7% sex with men and women, and none of them reported sex with women alone. In contrast, as we expected, 72% of the women in the research clinic reported recent sex with women, 9% with men in the last month, and 11% with both. Anal sex was interestingly different in two groups, and we defined anal sex as any penetrative sexual behavior, penis, toy, fingers, etc. And that was 16% in the STD clinic in the last month and a third of women in the research clinic. They weren't different by age or recent douching, and importantly, douching is very low in this population of women despite the very high rates of BV. So the next series of slides I'll go through rather quickly, and what they show you among BV-positive women, importantly, so just that group who had BV by AMSL confirmed by Nugent, what the prevalence of these individual bacteria was by specific PCR, qualitative PCR. And the first one is BVAB1, and you can see that there really was a slightly lower prevalence among women who reported sex with men and women, so the categories are no sex, women only, men only, and then sex with men and women, and that's in the last 3 months. You can see that a substantial minority of women across all these categories had BVAB1, ranging from about 25 to 37%. When we look at, and again, these were chosen specifically, I showed you a whole bunch of PCRs. I'm not going to go through every single species. I'm just going to talk about the ones that are most specific for BV or the ones that we found to be different. BVAB2, which we find to be highly sensitive for BV, it's the one that we actually find the most commonly in these women. Somewhat higher prevalence in women only, but that was not statistically significant, and you can see that it's fairly common across all of these groups, ranging from about 68% to about 83%. And then BVAB3 in the dark blue there, probably the least common of these bugs, given even though it's highly specific for BV, is always very, very highly tracked with BVAB1, interestingly enough, raising the question of whether there's some metabolic interdependence there. But really no significant difference among those groups. Things got quite a bit more interesting when we looked at something called Megasphaera type 1, which is an anaerobe that's only very recently been cultivated in Sharon Hillier's lab, actually. And Megasphaera 1 is probably the most sensitive bacteria from our BV bugs. It's really present very, very commonly, particularly in women who reported sex only with women. And I'm going to show you some statistical comparisons to bear these out in a moment. So you can see a strong suggestion there that women who had sex with women only in the last month did have the highest prevalence of this bacterium. very, very different than what we saw with megaspheroma type 2, which was seen vanishingly rarely in women who reported sex only with women, but relatively commonly between 25 and 30%, 33% of the women who had any sexual experience with men in the last month. So some suggestion here that there actually is a different profile by these women's sexual history. So when we looked at this with a little bit more intense statistical calculation, just sort of breaking out those graphs to show you them a little bit more closely, what did the odds ratios look like? Well, it turned out that women who reported sex with men were significantly less likely to have megaspheroma 1, with the odds ratio there of 0.73, but quite a bit more likely to have megaspheroma type 2, odds ratio of almost 5. Interestingly enough, Lactobacillus crispatus, which we know is the definition of healthy normal microbiota, i.e. not BV, was considerably more common among the heterosexual or women who had sex with men in the last month. And we can talk about that if we have time. I have some thoughts about that. So the women who reported sex with women were less likely to have lactobacillus detected by PCR. Because of this association with recent exposure to sex with men in megaspheroma 2, we actually looked at it by other measures of recent exposure to male sex partners, and what we found was that the likelihood of having this organism detected actually increased by increasing numbers of reported male sex partners in the last 3 months, so that for every increase in your risk category from 1 to 2 and then to 3+ male partners, you had a 50% increase in the likelihood of having megaspheroma type 2. What about detection of individual bugs by report of sex with women only? As you might expect, there was a bit of a reversal here. These women were slightly more likely to have megaspheroma 1, but not surprisingly, considerably less likely to have megaspheroma type 2, so pretty much tracking with what you saw before. And then finally, what did we see by race? We were really interested in looking at this. And what we found was that among the women with BV who self-identified as Black, so again, all these women have BV, there was a statistically increased risk of having almost all these organisms, which is kind of interesting and raises the question of what's going on here. Not surprisingly, we are attentive to the fact that race and behaviors and sexual networks are potentially, if not always related or not often related. And so what we did was to try to adjust for race with some sexual behaviors. It's a little bit complicated, as you might imagine, to do this. And it's also complicated to just choose one of these bugs, because really BV is a community kind of based syndrome. So when you just choose one bug, I'm not really sure what you're really doing. But I did think it was important to at least explore this a little bit, given that we were clearly seeing a relationship between one of these bugs and increased probably unprotected sexual exposure. So when we did adjust for our association between megaspheroma type 2 and Black race, we did see a reduction in the odds ratio to a twofold. Actually, it did become statistically non-significant. When we did the same for Black race among women who reported sex only with women, it did also reduce it, but it remained significant. And then adjusting for the association between vaginal intercourse with a male partner and Black race, also a reduction, and just barely became statistically not significant. And I'm going to try to interpret these for you in a moment, because I think it's very confusing. So basically, just to summarize, adjustment for these sexual behaviors did reduce the association with Black race and megaspheroma, that should be type 2. And then the reverse was also true when you adjusted for race. So I think there are some important limitations to point out about this data. First of all, in our research clinic, participants were self-referred or referred by partners, and that's actually been a limitation for some time. We can't really replicate that the way that you can replicate a population or clinic-based study. And then CASI was used in that population. Obviously, CASI does yield higher rates of disclosure for sensitive behaviors, and routine interview was used, albeit with an excellent research clinician who develops a great rapport with patients in our STD clinic. But I don't know that those are directly comparable, so I think that's an important point. And furthermore, these groups may not be representative. It's a Seattle-based group with a very low prevalence of STDs. I would love to do this study in the group of women who presented to the Mississippi STD clinic. I think we'd find very different things. And we use qualitative PCR. We do have quantitative PCRs. We just have not applied that to this population. So I think what we can conclude is that vaginal communities of BVAB, megaspheric types 1 and 2, which are highly specific and sensitive for BV, are associated with recent sexual behavior and also with host characteristics that track with race as defined by self-identity. This supports a role, I think, for both exogenous sexual acquisition and endogenous host factors in determining the communities that cause or are associated with BV in an individual woman. This, I think, opens up a huge area for research because it really gets to the question of whether what we're seeing with BV is truly a sexually transmitted infection. It may be for some women and it may not be for others. So there's a lot of work, I think, to do on host factors, and this can also help, I think, direct our assessment of extragenital reservoirs for some of these organisms, certainly the male urethra, the oropharynx, and probably the rectum as well. And then we're looking very closely at, we've got a number of partners, female partners in the study, and we're trying to sort of really look carefully in a sophisticated way at the BVAB communities and those partners with control non-partners. So I'll just finish by acknowledging my stellar group of collaborators who are listed here, particularly David Fredericks, whose lab really performs the bulk of the work in these studies. I'll stop there and take any questions. All right, I'm gonna let up, oh, not gonna get off the hook. I knew David would have a question. Peter.
Really fascinating work to me. I had a question. You didn't mention the pubertal sac as another reservoir for pathogens, and if you could comment on the associations in your work with male pathogens.
Great. Yeah. Excellent point and a good prelude, I think, to your talk. So what Peter's mentioning is the whole concept of the subprepucial area in uncircumcised men being a favorable reservoir for BV-associated bacteria. It very interesting, two studies published in the last couple of years out of the Uganda group where men were randomized, of course, to circumcision versus not for prevention of HIV acquisition. When we know that how that story ended, it was good. But they actually also followed the wives or female partners, who were mostly wives, of these men from the time of the enrollment of the man into the study for a year. And they followed those women for the incidence of BV and trichomoniasis. And they showed that among the women who were partners of males who were circumcised, the incidence of BV over the course of that year was significantly reduced. I think it was about 40% reduction, suggesting that these women were probably exposed less to something that had previously been born, basically, in the subprepucial area. That group also just published a couple months ago a nice study looking at the microbiome using cultivation-independent techniques in the men pre and post circumcision. And they showed that the community of bacteria changed significantly post circumcision with a big reduction in numbers. So I think that may be very interesting. It may be that that area is not just a focus for HIV laden cells, Langerhans cells, but may also have flora that could promote acquisition of HIV in women as well. David, did you have a question? Or Lisa, both of you?
But I'm also curious about the fact that the group of women who reported male sex also have a fairly high
infection. Yeah.
With what's going on before?
Yeah.
Do you have any sense of what's going on?
Yeah, great question. So Lisa's just asking about the apparent finding that even among the women who reported no recent sex, there was still a high prevalence of these BV bugs. So these are women who have BV, so they are going to have the BV bugs, right, regardless, I think, of whether they had sex or not. Remember that sex variable was just for the last 3 months, and what I suspect is that these are women probably who have had BV for a long time, although I don't obviously have data. This is an enrollment visit, so we don't really have good data on how long this BV was detected. In these women were followed, in the research clinic, those women were followed for, as you know, a year quarterly, so we will actually be able to look at that variable eventually with a better sense of incident BV as opposed to just BV detected at baseline. So I think it's a great question. It shows that these bugs are, you know, there when they have BV, which is a good thing. But it does, I don't think this is the data set that can really help us so much with the sexual kind of transmission or recent sexual exposure question. David.
So a great presentation. It's very complicated data, and so you listed a number of other organizations. Mm-hmm. Can we assume that you picked out the
yes.
three that were interesting in terms of being associations, and therefore that the other organisms have no significance?
Yeah, sorry, I meant to make that explicit, absolutely. So there was no, David's asking if, did I listed all those other PCR assays that I did with, that David did with the other species, and can we assume that because I didn't talk about them, there was no difference, and that's true, there was no difference. I didn't want to overwhelm you with data. Okay, thanks a lot.